Ladies and gentlemen, sitting before you and you hold in your hands a copy of the New York Times #2 best-selling book in the country. Adios America and its author, Ann Coulter.
Thank you. Thank you. That is all because of nice people like you and my friend Chris here, because as I was just saying, I've never gotten so little attention for a book. This is my now 11th New York Times bestseller. If I were a liberal, I would be accepting honors at the Kennedy Center once a week. I'd be constantly posing for the cover of Vanity Fair and Glamour magazine. I would probably be on a postage stamp. But instead, I can't get the mainstream media to give me the time of day. And they just don't want you thinking about what they're doing to the country with immigration.
And here's the thing about Ann Coulter. And do you not, this is why every time, this is the fourth time I think you visited us.
And thank you.
And why every time it has sold out. You don't remember this, but I do. My very first year doing radio in Philadelphia,
yeah,
you were my very first guest.
I do remember.
And we sold that place out. It was a delicious steak dinner.
Yes.
And we sold the whole steakhouse out. And every time since you've come, we've sold out in record speed because you're fearless and people respect ferociousness.
Thank you.
And fight.
Thank you. I thank you.
And so that's what I'll first say before we get into some of the contents of the book. You made the point to me upstairs a minute ago. First of all, may I get a hug? That, I loved that. Did you see that? Did you see the "can I get a hug" girl? I asked Ann, I said, this is what I mean. You go on with Jorge Ramos when you've got the flu. And you said, I wanted to go. You wanted
yes,
to go to
they
that
were
house?
All. I had my publisher. I kept saying, we got to do this. We got to do this. I want to be on Jorge Ramos. He was off the first 2 weeks of my book tour. And I said, tell him he's getting a total exclusive. He will have my book before anyone else. I'll do it the week before the book comes out. My publisher was baffled. He was baffled. But I told Chris, I figured I'm finally, you know, taking advantage. I'm getting a Mexican doing a job no American will do. Interview Ann Coulter. And he did it, and, you know, good for him. No other liberal will interview me.
What is the difference, then? You give him the credit. You've also given Bill Maher the credit. In fact, you have said repeatedly on the show, on the phone and here, you consider him, a professional, maybe a personal friend.
Yes, he has been very good to me. And in fact, I'm flying out this Friday to do his show. He's dark all of July. And there you have it. That will be the first liberal other than Jorge Ramos. And I assume Jorge is a liberal on other stuff. I just know he's against me on immigration. Bill Maher will be the first liberal to interview me. Where are the rest of them? Where are the rest of them? They used to talk about immigration. Now, I must say, recently, they used to talk about immigration to lie about immigration. They'll always tell you about, you know, the immigrant that won a spelling bee, the immigrant valedictorian, as you will know when you read my book. Whoa, there's a lot of stuff they're not telling us. But recently, because the American people, you, have shut down amnesty proposals 3 times in the last decade that were being considered in Congress. And that is not because of some major network or even a small cable network taking up the cause against this. It's been, as I've said, it's about 3 bloggers, 3 radio hosts, Matt Drudge, and the American people keep shutting it down. So the media, I think, finally figured out, okay, next time it comes up, we're just not even telling them about it. We're just not reporting it. And that happened this year. We elect the first Republican Congress in a few years. And as many of you know who follow my work assiduously, I argued that we should just vote Republican, we'll fight with Republicans once they're in. And oh boy, do we have a lot of fighting to do. So we vote Republican, we give them a majority Senate, majority House, based on their claim that they'd stop Obama's amnesty. I mean, I can't think of another issue that was as big in the 2014 election. Dave Brat took out Eric Cantor.
Mm-hmm.
The first time a member of leadership has been taken out in a primary, I believe in history, simply on immigration. Tom Cotton, bless his soul, took out a sitting, popular, Democratic United States senator Mark Pryor in Arkansas. You have Ben Sasse out in Nebraska. He crushed his primary opponents, Republicans who were for amnesty. He got twice what two Republican businessmen who supported amnesty got combined. Mitch McConnell, now the Senate leader, said, we're going to block Obama's executive amnesty if you give us a majority. You give us a majority. We give them a majority, and they funded Obama's amnesty. And the worst thing was, I was finishing my book then. You may have seen me on both Fox and Friends and Hannity haranguing them live on air. Why won't you shut up about ISIS? Four Americans have been killed. Here, don't want to be killed by ISIS? Don't go to Syria. Could you tell us what they're doing in the Senate? I mean, what's so surprising about that is not only were they betraying us, but it's a way to make Democrats look really bad. Democrats don't want to admit they're funding amnesty.
Right.
It's very unpopular with their voters. None of them said they supported it before the election. It would kill them with their own voters. There was no press. That Democrats filibustered. The Republicans did try to defund the amnesty bill as a small part of the Homeland Security. They weren't going to fund Homeland Security, which was irrelevant because almost all of them are mandatory, or what do they call them? Essential employees, right?
Right.
I love that. Homeland Security, almost all essential employees. So, okay, don't fund Homeland Security. It was a beautiful plan. Democrats filibustered that for at least 3 weeks, and they didn't have time to talk about it on TV. That never made the news. They've decided you, the American people, can't be trusted with the truth. They are not going to tell you. They treat us like children. Don't worry. It's like a crying child. You're putting the child to bed. Well, yeah, he says he hates me tonight, but it's good for him. That's what they're saying to us on what they're doing with immigration. It's good for you.
And to that point, isn't that what we've just seen late last week and into this morning and today with the trade deal? It's more of that, shut up, we know what's good for you, you don't need to know what's in it. But anytime Barack Obama and Paul Ryan are on the same page, I get terribly nervous.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Wow, Ryan has turned out to be a disaster. I still think he was a good idea for the vice presidential pick for Romney, only because I thought it would lure liberals into talking about Social Security, because remember he had wanted to, you know, phase it, I guess, into a private system or something, and even Bill Clinton admitted to him on that private camera once, like, keep up what you're doing on Social Security, it's going bankrupt. I watch MSNBC a lot. On MSNBC, they kept saying, ha ha, they have this nut Paul Ryan on Social Security. And I thought, fantastic. They're going to be forced to talk about Social Security. But it turns out you can't trust what they say on MSNBC because they're all zealots. They don't take polls before talking on air. Democrats do. Social Security never came up, and Paul Ryan has been a total disaster in that treaty bill. Again.
What is that? You actually alluded, I think last week, if I read this correctly, you alluded to this being some sort of backdoor amnesty tucked
yes.
into it. How
yes.
so?
It's a backdoor amnesty. That's the only part I really care about. Because it's such a scam. It's not only the free movement of goods, but the free movement of people across national borders. So if a company says, we want 1,000 Pakistanis here, okay, they get to let them in. No checking with Congress. No, we don't even have to deal with the immigration rules. So if Obama's amnesty fails in the courts, since Republicans apparently aren't going to stop it, they have this backdoor amnesty. I mean, why else? Even liberals are saying this. Why is Obama suddenly so into free trade?
Right.
When did that become a big thing? No, it's because it allows the free movement of people. It's a backdoor amnesty.
And it's been killed in the short term. Is it back? Is it coming back?
It's been killed, and once again, thanks to the Drudge Report. But like I say, if Matt Drudge ever goes on vacation, they will pass amnesty in the dead of night. None of us will know about it.
And I got to tell you, Ann, what a bizarre thing to find ourselves on the same page, different reasons, but on the same page as Nancy Pelosi.
Yes.
I mean, that's how nasty it's gotten in Washington when we find ourselves in agreement with Nancy Pelosi.
Yes.
Let's put the brakes on something.
Oh, yes. No, the Republicans are being very, very bad now. And To quote Jack Nicholson in The Shining, they need to be corrected.
All right, so talk to me before we get into before we get into some of the candidates, and I have a lot to talk about in the book too. Talk to me about who in Washington do you look to at this hour, and you say they're doing it right, they're maintaining their promise, there's hope for their leadership. Do you see anybody?
Jeff Sessions, absolute saint. I mean, he's the equivalent of Jesse Helms years ago, but Jesse Helms kept the Soviet Union at bay while we waited for Ronald Reagan to be elected. And now these young Republicans, the ones I just mentioned, Ben Sasse, Nebraska, Tom Cotton, Arkansas, the great Dave Bratt, of course, Steve King from Iowa. There are a few out there, and I have an article I hope will be coming out, or a column I hope in The Hill this week. If not, I'll end up publishing it myself. It'll be my column. But what I'm hoping for with immigration, and I describe this more explicitly toward the end of my book, which isn't as long as it looks. There are 100 pages of footnotes. You have to read this book. It's not some cheesy ghostwritten book that you put on your coffee table. This is a book you really have to read. It's much shorter than it looks, and you get to this at the end. But I'm hoping the immigration issue follows the trajectory of so many other issues in the past, and that is Republican politicians fall for what the mainstream media is saying, the New York Times saying, oh, you got to get the feminists with the Equal Rights Amendment. You got to. You have to be for this yesterday. You're going to lose every election. And then Ronald Reagan comes along and Phyllis Schlafly, and oh, it turns out nobody really wants the ERA. It's defeated. It's a laugh line today. The same thing happened with abortion. Many Republicans used to support abortion. And, I mean, it wasn't like some, other than a few, Republicans said, wow, actually, abortion is a winning issue for us. Anyone who would vote against us on abortion isn't voting for us anyway. It was the people. It was because the pro-choicers, as they call themselves, kept losing, losing, losing. And the most beautiful example, which is the example I use in the column, is gun control. Oh, Republicans loved gun control. Bush loved gun control. William Weld loved gun control. Even the Democrats, they believed Chuck Schumer and the New York Times. The incessant citation of totally phony polls. Americans love gun control. You're crazy, Republicans. You gotta be for gun restrictions. And then one after another, every time they passed gun control, they kept losing elections. They're thrown out of office. It happens so many times, and I go through the New York Times quotes in the column that's coming out. New York Times saying that, for example, New Jersey Governor Florio, was it Jim Florio? Jim, right? A month before his reelection, the New York Times wrote a news story saying how Florio and his Democratic legislature in New Jersey, his popularity had soared with the introduction of stringent gun control laws. One month later, legislature knocked out, Florio knocked out, and Bill Clinton himself said it was because of the gun control laws. And then it happened with Bill Clinton's Democratic Congress, his first 2 years. They passed the assault weapon ban. Wiped out. Republicans take Congress for the first time in 50 years. And again, this wasn't because, you know, some genius in Washington, some Republican politician, to say nothing of some heinous Republican political consultant said to them, hey, we've run the numbers and guns are really popular with your base voters. No. The political consultants were saying, no, you have to be reasonable, appeal to the soccer moms. Look, everybody wants a waiting period. Everybody, ban assault weapons. No, and Republicans kept doing it until they started to lose elections. And now you can't find a politician who's in favor of gun control. And I want that to happen with immigration.
Will it? Can it?
I hope so.
Here's why. Well, let's just get into it then. Here's why, and you write about that. I mean, to me, the meat of this, the blowback, the reason people get so wound up and upset is because they all think it's rooted in white lady doesn't like brown skin people.
Right.
I mean, can we just boil it down? This book is about a white woman who doesn't like people of color. To the left, that's what they think it is. And
no.
They just do. They think when you talk about whites, when you talk about race, they think, oh, well, there's a woman that wants a lily white America. So knock that down. Explain what you mean when you talk about the racial component and the demographics of the country.
The reason the racial issue, I mean, it's being used as a smokescreen by the left. We happen to be taking all of Latin America's poor rather than, say, Poland or Russia's poor. So they use it as a shield and act as if someone who's never set foot in this country before is the equivalent of an African American and we're making up for the legacy of slavery. Well, no. We didn't do anything to you. You just got here. If you have grievances, go home and address the perpetrators. And actually, I mean, not that Republicans will particularly get credit for this, but the truth is the truth, and I'm going to say it. No, I'm the one standing up for African Americans whose experience in America is unique. I mean, I know other immigrant groups, probably going back to the Irish, have complained about, you know, Irish need not apply, and now Mexicans, no Mexicans. Come on, that's a whole order business different from slavery and Jim Crow. No, we have immigrant groups like my gender, I might add, like gays, like, you know, the disabled, like everyone except a healthy white man, piggybacking on the black experience in America. Civil rights laws are for African Americans. They are not for foreigners. And today in this country, someone who arrives today will get affirmative action over your child applying to college.
But isn't it good to know now that white guys like me can now claim they want to be black and that's good enough to be
yes.
black?
Yes. Yes.
I'm a black man, everyone.
Yes.
That counts now. That's a thing.
Yes.
Caitlyn Jenner said you just happened to be born in the wrong skin if you
no,
want to be black.
No, that's right. And did you know that white women pretending to be black are paid 70 cents on the dollar to white men pretending to be black. So we got all the victimologies going.
Here's what you say. Page 79. I love this. Al Sharpton's catchphrase is, pro-lifers only care about the fetus until it's born. Well, Democrats only care about immigrants until they can vote. I promise you, if immigrants voted 8-2 for Republicans rather than 8-2 Democrats, Chuck Schumer would be down on the border with the Minutemen.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. What people, you could win a bar bet on this. Other than the 1964 landslide for LBJ, when is the last time Democrats have gotten a majority of white people to vote for them? 1948. That's why they're bringing in ringers. And they're trying to persuade the Republican Party. Oh, don't appeal to the white vote. White votes are bad. They're bad. Be embarrassed about having white people vote for you. No, why are white votes bad? That's our country.
So let's talk through this. Let's stay with this and talk through it because this seems to be the trigger point. Because people hear you say, I guarantee there are people in this audience. They go, oh, crap. It sounds like Ann's saying she's afraid of a non-majority white country and the Republicans will never win again unless we remain majority white.
Well, for one thing, why shouldn't I care about that? Al Gore fought to exclude military ballots in Florida because he thought it would help him win an election. I'm a Republican. Why shouldn't I care about that? But the larger point is the only reason Democrats are pushing this is for the votes. They don't care about the immigrants who came in last year and the year before. Not only is dumping poor, illiterate, unskilled immigrants by the million on this country, it's bad for Americans at the lower end of the scale. Well, that includes a lot of African Americans. They're hurt most of all for the unskilled work. Who else is hurt? Hispanic immigrants who came in last year and the year before and the year before. But the Democrats don't care about them. They act as if they're speaking for Lupe the maid. No, they're trying to drive down Lupe's salary by bringing in more people to compete with her. No, I am the one who is defending Hispanic immigrants and blacks, but I think especially those groups, people at the low end of the economic scale, I want to bring in people who will take Mark Zuckerberg's job and will take Marco Rubio's job.
So let's go back to Reagan. Reagan is obviously someone that so many conservatives hold up as the gold standard. I've heard you do something almost no one on the right does anymore and say, well, on this issue, Reagan was profoundly wrong and perhaps forever set the Republican Party back generations later.
Yes. Yes, I mean, I was, I don't know, in junior high school when Reagan was running against Bush, and I was licking postage stamps for him. So I'm not going to be out Reagan tier. All these people who would not have been for Reagan at the time can cite nothing but Reagan. I mean, he wasn't Jesus Christ. He imposed the largest tax in the country. The reason I think it's worth mentioning that is I get fed up with people knocking some of the candidates who come along today, like Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney, with a more liberal state, was more conservative than Reagan was in a lot of ways. Reagan passed the most liberal abortion law in the country at the time. That doesn't mean I don't love Reagan. I mean, he won the Cold War. He was strong. He was brave. He spoke to, he had an advantage most politicians don't have. He did events like this. Those GE tours are what I think kept him.
Absolutely.
Kept him tied to the people so he wouldn't make mistakes like that. Look, he was scammed by the Democrats on a tax increase, or by Congress, technically. I think it was a majority Republican Congress. Okay, I'll give you your tax increase if you guys cut taxes. And then what happened was, for every dollar that was, it worked the way Reagan said it was going to work. If we cut taxes, we'll get more money coming into the Treasury Department. And that happened. Don't ever let anyone tell you it didn't. For each year Reagan was in an office, the more taxes were cut, more money came into the Treasury. But for every dollar that came into the Treasury extra, Congress spent $3 more. That's how we got the deficit. It wasn't Reagan's tax cuts. Reagan calls that a mistake. I would say the other mistake he made was, yeah, falling for the amnesty, which was the same promises they keep giving us today. Give us amnesty this one time and never again. Never again. Then we'll impose the employer sanctions. We'll tighten the border. Well, since then, at least another 30 million illegal immigrants have come in, probably closer to 50 million. As you read in my book.
So can I press on this question? Are you saying, or are you of the belief that Republicans nationally, a Republican candidate for president, if this country becomes non-majority white, whenever that's projected to be, a Republican can never be elected president again?
Yes, the country will be California, and you will all be the Kardashians. Yeah.
That's a big statement. Republicans will never win a non-majority white vote again.
Look at California. Look at California.
So there is no, there. You don't see any way to course correct on
nope.
that?
Nope. Nope. But there's a way to course correct on the country becoming minority white. And by the way, why, I mean, why is it, as I say in the book, there's this weird rhetorical symmetry. Every night I turn on MSNBC and they're cheering. This is fantastic. America is becoming browner. The browning of America. You read articles all the time. The browning of America. Ha, ha, ha. Old white people, you're dying off. Wait, why can they say that's great, but I can't say I don't think that's great? What is that? And I might add, this was all done by Teddy Kennedy's 1965 Immigration Act. It was done intentionally and to give, you know, Teddy Kennedy a legacy. Apparently our job is to improve the self-esteem of this one Irish Catholic family. That's the rest of the country's job here. And when they pushed through the 1965 Immigration Act, Teddy Kennedy, everyone supporting the bill, swore up and down it would not change the demographic makeup of America. So if it was okay for them to say it wouldn't change the demographic makeup, why can't I say, hey, it changed? You lied. And the reason why is the political correctness, but that's why I'm stressing, if you came here yesterday, you're not black. You don't get to Mau Mau us. Republicans keep falling for this. No, we don't owe Mexicans anything. We don't owe Somalis anything. We owe African Americans something. And I mean people who are related, not Kenyan Barack Obama. Oh. That is what the political correctness comes from. That is what affirmative action comes from. That's what civil rights comes from. That's what the 14th Amendment comes from. That's why the N-word is a unique word. I won't say the N-word, but now we have, you know, illegal immigrants coming in and saying, well, illegal immigrants is like the N-word. No, screw you. You're not policing my language. It's the maddest thing.
And I well, yes. And I want to get to language police in a minute, too, because that's a huge issue, at least with us right now on the show. How is it, then, that a party that will now exclusively cater to those that are now minority voters, but maybe will someday be the majority voter, how can they nominate an old white lady as the face of their party and get away with it?
Oh, well, you will notice, their love for immigrants ends at the vote. As I describe in the book, all these immigrant right groups, and there are hundreds, I'd always go and check to see who works for this organization. And they'll usually, you know, find some immigrant to put on the masthead. But they're not heading the team. No, these are... the one thing that is deceptive about my book is the subtitle. It isn't just the left. It's just that if I'd put in all the people working to turn our country into a third world hellhole, the subtitle would have, you know, continued to the back page. It's the left, the Democrats, big businesses in need of a lot of cheap labor, Republicans who want the campaign cash, greedy churches who get tax benefits. I wasn't even saying illegal immigrants. I didn't need to be bleeped. But of these groups, what's striking also about the immigrant rights groups are they're the exact same people who are always going around telling us what a horrible country we are. We're racist, we're sexist, we're homophobic, we're imperialistic, we're so greedy, we're so capitalistic and mean. Well, why are you bringing these poor third worlders to this hellhole? Well, this is how they decided to punish America. We're too good. We deserve to be punished. As if we owe the rest of the world. No, all we do is save the rest of the world. Well, that's going to be over. And who's going to save the rest of the world when America is gone?
And Hillary's their champion, really? I mean, this is what I don't understand. Hillary Clinton is the face of those people?
This is what I find so painful, and you have to read the full book. Again, it's much shorter than it looks. You can get through it very quickly, and it's really exciting. It reads like Forensic Files, a lot of amazing crimes you will not believe you didn't know about to illustrate how they're hiding. The media goes out of its way to hide this stuff.
I love what you've been saying about women. She's the first woman breaking the glass ceiling. She, boy, the woman thing, well, you talk on in this book, you talk about the women.
Well, women are going to fare under a new policy, but you will see, I want you to be burning with rage before you get to the last chapter, and that's when I go through the candidates running for president on our side or potentially running for president, and I evaluate them solely on the basis of this issue. And as I've said before, but I'm going to tell all of you, if you think there's an issue more important than immigration, you're wrong. Whatever issue you care about, abortion, gay marriage, a flat tax, Iran getting nukes, whatever issue you care about, if immigration, the way it is going on right now, is not stopped, you will lose. You will lose. Take your chances with Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and Barack Obama from now until the end of time, because Barack Obama would not have been elected without Teddy Kennedy's Immigration Act. Romney would have won a bigger victory against Obama in 2012 than Reagan did against Carter in 1980. But for the recent immigrants being dumped on the country to block vote for the Democrats, immigration decides everything, who gets to vote and live here. But in evaluating our presidential candidates, I am compelled to point out that Romney was the best we ever had it. He was Jan Brewer before Jan Brewer was Jan Brewer. Vetoed. And, I mean, I'm hoping part of the point of my book will not only be to wake up the Americans who aren't already woken up about immigration, but to get conservatives to recruit Mitt Romney and demand he run again. I want Romney Walker. And
all right.
I think he would run. He can't fight both the shyster Tea Party groups and the actual Tea Parties. I speak at a lot of Tea Parties. They love Romney. It's always the fake phony frauds raising money and, yo, he's a rhino. Wait, could we look at what he did? He vetoed in-state tuition for illegals. He vetoed free health care for illegals. He threatened to veto driver's licenses for illegals, so that never came to his desk. He struck a deal with the federal government to allow his state troopers to arrest illegal aliens. He never backed away from self-deport, even when Rupert Murdoch was haranguing him a few weeks before the election. And you're going to call him the rhino, Sarah Palin?
Well, let me press on the self-deportation thing. He was ridiculed for that, self-deportation.
Yes.
Explain that concept. What did he mean by that? And you still stand by that.
Well, I think it's a little soft and compassionate. That's not my plan. I always point out that the polls on immigration, the two options you have, this is in the book, it's always either we have two options on what to do with illegal immigrants. Number one, and no choosing items off the menu. Number one, we round up small children and grandmothers at gunpoint, put them in leg shackles, put them on, load onto buses where they'll probably be incinerated by the heat, bus them back at a cost of $8 gazillion to you, the American taxpayer. That is option one. Option two, after they pay back taxes and fines and send so much money into the treasury, we put them on and learn English and civics lessons. We put them on a path to legalization. No, neither of those options exist in the world. No politician, no bill has suggested rounding them up. We didn't round them up to get them here. We're not going to have to round them up to get them home. After writing my book, I'm now the one person in America who's in favor of the rounding up option. But what Romney was saying, I mean, there was nothing offensive about it. It was kind of a wonky way of saying they'll go home the same way they came. Once the jobs dry up, once we enforce E-Verify, once we enforce them not getting welfare, you know, 71% of illegal immigrants are collecting government benefits. 71%, and Marco Rubio says, oh, no, they will not be able to accept government benefits under my bill. Hey, Marco, they're accepting it now. They'll get even more when your bill passes. And the whole, the obsession with Romney saying self-deportation, which I do go through in the book. I have thought, I mean, especially by the Bush family, just going crazy over that. As a regular viewer of MSNBC, they could turn the phrase apple pie into a curse word, a terrible gaffe a politician made. They'd sit around the table, they'd say it, you know, angrily, they'd sneer, did you hear what he said? Apple pie, everybody would giggle. And then, you know, a month later, one of my conservative friends would be saying, well, there was that gaffe about the apple pie. What is offensive about self-deport? It means go home the way you came.
And in fact, we know statistically they did. When the economy really tanked,
right,
and arguably it still has, what, two-thirds of the Mexican economy is U.S. dollars or something, I read? Something like that. I mean, some really remarkable sum of money that props up the Mexican economy is the U.S. dollar sent home from here.
Yes.
A lot of folks did self-deport because there were no jobs, and the jobs we are creating right now are those minimum wage, low-skill jobs.
Yes, so that can only be done by robots.
Only so many of us.
Yeah,
as
and
it
those
is.
Can be done by robots, so wait a few years, and we're just going to have millions of peasants collecting welfare. Because you won't need the peasants picking. There are machines that can pick strawberries. Strawberries are apparently very difficult to pick because it has to be exactly ripe. There are like three cameras. It works all night. It doesn't complain. It doesn't need health care. It doesn't need unemployment insurance. Works through the night. Computers can do all this. I'm from New York City. Every single cab is driven by an immigrant where apparently red lights do not mean stop. And now Uber is replacing all the yellow cabs.
Yeah.
Oh, this is fantastic that we have all these jihadists living in New York. That's going to work out great. That's fantastic. But again, the Democrats don't care. They're block voting for the Democrats.
What happens then, and I think you saw it in Baltimore. I do agree, and you've said as much. You have, particularly in the black community, a desperation for a better way of life. Where are the job opportunities?
Right.
We know where they're going.
Right. And I think I say this. It's the only thing I really repeat myself on in the book. It's at different points. It pops up when it's relevant. Mitt Romney got 20% of the young black male vote. And I think it's because he wouldn't back away from self-deport. 20%. What other Republican has done that? I can tell you what other Republican has done that. Pete Wilson in 1994. when he ran on the back of Proposition 187, which denied public benefits to illegal aliens. He was down in the polls. It was this huge come-from-behind victory. Suddenly he started being talked about as a presidential candidate. It's a very inspiring story, and it's useful for Americans and elected Republicans to think about now, because the demographics of California in 1994 were almost identical to the demographics of America today. Which means a Republican can win running anti-immigration.
And when people say, Reagan won 48 states, Reagan won 48 states, you have always been very quick to point out he still didn't win the minority vote of that era either.
Exactly. This is a very important point. I included it in a chapter I titled, after I turned in the final book, which I had to cut 200 pages from a month before it came out, because I wanted to keep it short so you would all read it.
Most of it's footnotes.
Yeah, so don't be intimidated. This is a book you have to read. But right after I turned it in, I went to a nice Christmas dinner party. It was right before Christmas with a bunch of beyond one percenters, 0.1 percenters. I was the sad welfare recipient at the dinner. And they're all good Americans. They're very wealthy, but the rich people are stupid. And in arguing with them at dinner, I came home, I turned the book in, and I wrote up this very short chapter. All the chapters are short with lots of headings to lure in the Twitter generation. And wrote up this chapter, and just as a placeholder, I didn't know if I'd use it as a column. And then I decided at the end, no, not only am I keeping it in the book, I'm keeping the placeholder title. I wrote this chapter when I realized how stupid rich people are. And because they all repeat the same things to one another, and one of them is this, their obsessive focus on how we need to slightly increase the Hispanic vote. If we could just increase the Hispanic, no, your base is white people. Slightly increase the white people's vote. We're still a majority. If Romney had gotten, thank you, you've probably heard me say this, if Romney had won 71% of the Hispanic vote and no Republican is winning 71% of the Hispanic vote in a presidential election, maybe in some uncontested state election, not in a presidential election when Democrats are doing their voter turnout. If he had won 71% of the Hispanic vote, he still would have lost. If he had won 4% more of the white vote, he would have won. So what are the Republicans doing? Let's try to get 3 more Hispanics to vote for us.
Now, I'm going to speak as the consultant class, and any number of talking heads on cable news when they say, Ann, I just fundamentally believe, as a Republican, there's a way we can communicate to all Americans of all color. I don't see color. I see America. That's not what you're saying.
That's not what I'm saying. Oh, and by the way, that was a long way. I didn't actually specifically answer your question. One of the things I'd argued with the rich people that night about was Reagan got the lowest percentage of the black vote of any president running between LBJ and Obama. Reagan did. Reagan did. Oh, and he won an historic landslide. Remember that? Now, look, my rule of thumb, based on looking at actual election results and not wanting to raise money like a political consultant, is if Republicans running for office, if the New York Times is not calling you racist, you're losing. Now, you guys all know Reagan. I know Reagan. He wasn't racist, but they called him a racist. And Republicans who run from that and are afraid from that, I mean, why not bring up the issue of immigrants getting affirmative action over native-born whites? Why not run on that? Why not protect white jobs?
Because we're a nation of cowards, Ann. Eric Holder told us so. Right? No, that's what Eric Holder said.
You.
We're a nation of cowards and we don't want to talk about race.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, what Eric Holder said. And I want to talk about race.
and yet, that's... But see, this is what's interesting. I have long...
I don't think he wants to hear what I want to say.
No, I bet not. The black community and the Hispanic community will be eventually, whites aside, will come to a loggerheads. I mean,
they already have. They hate one another. That's part of... It's hilarious that the Republicans... Well, let me give you an example of this. In Florida, what are the two predominant Hispanic groups? Puerto Ricans and Cubans, of course. Which two groups of Hispanics do not need amnesty? They cannot be illegal aliens. Cubans and Puerto Ricans. So what does the Republican legislature last year push through? I was speaking at a Tea Party the day it went through. This is why it's stuck in my mind, in Florida. What did the Republican legislature and the Republican governor push through to win the Hispanic vote in Florida, in-state tuition for illegal aliens. They can't tell Hispanics apart. That's their position. We can't tell you guys apart. And to think that Hispanics and blacks are this, you know, happy, loving party. No, Republicans ought to be taking advantage of that. I spent a lot of time in L.A. Constant, unbelievable gang fights between Mexican gangs and blacks. It's shocking the different. No, the Democrats have to hold together this balkanized constituency.
Right.
Where they are at loggerheads now, and instead of Republicans taking advantage of that, it would be a bigger problem if only Republicans would say, okay, fine, Democrats, you're the minority party. We're the white party.
Which, I know you're not nut, I know you're not nut, yeah, can you imagine? Hi, I'm Mike Huckabee, and I'm the white party, can you imagine that?
Well, and people who like whites, like that, those sweet Mexicans in Arizona. I'm going to fly out and do a book signing with them. Mexicans have a restaurant someplace in Arizona. Maybe you guys saw this. I tweeted it out, if you follow me assiduously, about a few weeks ago, right when my book was coming out. They were holding, they had a big planned day, like next Tuesday is Whites Appreciation Day. And they they just said, we just like white people so much. I mean, they didn't mention it, but we don't commit crimes against them. they built this country. We like them. We're giving them a discount. And everybody went crazy, and they had to shut it down. But I think I'm going to go do a book signing there, and it'll be a secret white appreciation day. But I love them. So you don't have to be white to be the part of the white party. You're appreciating whites and this wonderful country we've built.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Harriet Tubman of whites and culture. So.
Exactly.
You're a noble woman. Jeb Bush announces today, on the eve of our big event, and he announces in Miami, one of my favorite Jeb Bush clips is to, Dom, our friend Dom, who's on after us at 9 o'clock on Talk Radio 1210, plays it all the time. Jaw agape when he plays it. I don't know that Jeb says it quite like this anymore, but at one point he said something to the effect of, hey, we got to love up on these immigrants because they're more fertile.
Yes.
What a bizarre... Yes. He apparently thinks we have a problem doing it? Is that... What's Jeb's position there exactly? Because I'm white and I love sex.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't, you know, this is why I would like you to be part of the debate commission. Because we gotta pursue this with him. No, that's the only reason I was not in Miami heckling him, because I had to be here with you folks tonight. But apparently he gave some of his speech in Spanish. And on the fertility point, Hispanics have a higher out-of-wedlock birth rate than American blacks. Wonder if that's going to cause any problems in the future. As those of you know who've read my book, Single Motherhood is in Guilty. Single motherhood, you, as I pointed out, you take out the factor of single motherhood, the difference in black and white crime rates disappears. So when I talk about how we owe African Americans something, I don't want to suggest that I think the Democrats did a good thing. No, their idea of help was, let's destroy the black family. So, okay, congratulations to them for that. And again, I mean, think of this. This is what it would be like being a Democrat. Every time something bad happens, Democrats think, fantastic, another Democratic voter. Oh, that family just got divorced. Great, another Democratic voter. A woman just got an abortion. Great, another Democratic voter. A child was born out of wedlock. Another Democratic voter. No, they're an awful party. How can anyone be a Democrat?
What is it specifically about the Bushes and Jeb Bush and that Chamber of Commerce set? Is it really at its bare bones nothing more than fiscal money coming into campaigns and the business community wants cheap labor? Is it that simple, or is there something more sinister in your view about their pandering to this illegal thing?
It's mostly the cheap labor, and part of it is, I mean, it's both stupidity and cowardice, if we can break that down. And also, I mean, like I say, they can't tell minority groups apart. Hey, you guys all look slightly brown. And Mike Huckabee said it directly. We're making up for slavery, but he wanted to give, I think the legislature may have blocked him, wanted to give illegal aliens in-state tuition. No. Mexicans aren't black people. They weren't brought here as slaves. They weren't discriminated against. You gotta stop thinking anyone who is, you know, slightly darker than Joe Pesci is, we're making up for slavery and the Middle Passage. No, they're the ones using skin color in order to try to trick us and make us think we have to do this because of slavery. No. I mean, it's bad enough that civil rights have been extended to from blacks to lesbians bringing their dates to the high school prom. It's bad enough that it's being, you know, extended to, you know, this, that, every other group. Civil rights are about black people. That has always been the conservative position. We, of course, were the ones always fighting for black civil rights, so we have sort of a history with this. But I don't know, where is Al Sharpton? Where the rest of them? But anyway, Chamber of Commerce, it's mostly for the cheap labor, the cheap maids, and also they enjoy feeling like they can walk around like Martin Luther King.
Yeah.
I get to pay my maid less and look enlightened at the same time.
Okay.
What's not to like about that?
And so I won't run down all the candidates because you do in your book, and we could later, but I'll then pivot to Marco Rubio, who, it's interesting to me, they'll say, has this really compelling story that could appeal to immigrants and actually bring immigrants over to the Republican side. Yet, look how he's treated. He dares make a couple of bucks or buy a fancy boat, and he's got to be beaten into submission. I mean, that's how a Republican, you know, regardless of what you think of Rubio, a Republican buys a fancy boat, and I don't care if you're Hispanic or Cuban or what are you, we're going to beat you into submission for having done so. So that's how the left treats even Republican Hispanics.
Eventually, the New York Times, I mean, the answer is look at John McCain. No, they had so much respect for him. Until he became the nominee and was running against a Democrat. Oh, they loved John McCain. As for Marco Rubio's speedboat, I know conservatives are trained to attack the New York Times, and that's good. Believe nothing you read there. Assume malintent. I actually thought it was it was not a good thing about Marco Rubio. And I mean, I don't get into this too much in my book because I wanted to keep it short so you would read it. But I do describe the history of America, which isn't taught, and which is why you hear this nonsense about America being a nation of immigrants. We're so diverse. No, the country has been around for hundreds of years, and basically from, you know, 1604 until 1970, when Teddy Kennedy decided to change it, we were about 80-90% white, 10-20% black. And from very small parts of the globe. That is biracial. That is not diverse. But what makes this country so successful and this culture so successful, and there are lots of studies on this, is that it was founded by British Protestants. You don't have to be a British Protestant, as we have seen with generations of immigrants, you know, white people from other parts of Western Europe. But it is the WASP character of America that made America, and part of that WASP character are things like thrift and non-ostentation. I mean, that's why, you know, the WASP look, the preppy look, has the patches on the elbows. That isn't a look. We're cheap. We patch stuff. And it's part of what makes, it is that WASP character of America, whether you've ever thought about this before, that makes America is such a wonderful place to live and such a wonderful country. People don't flaunt their wealth over others. You can't, I mean, when it's being done right, you can't tell. In my hometown, a very WASPy, wealthy town, New Canaan, one I grew up in, you could tell who the richest person in town was because he had the oldest car. I like that about Americans, that we don't show off our wealth or sort of push it around to people. And that we're thrifty and plan for the future. And yes, an immigrant could come from Pakistan and adopt that culture, but we've dropped the whole assimilation thing. Mm-hmm. No, we're supposed to be embarrassed about a successful culture. Well, if the culture Marco Rubio came from was successful, he'd still be in Cuba. It is not successful. We don't want to adopt Latin Americans' ways. I mean, I don't think the Kardashians would be, you would have heard of them but for the last 30 years of immigration. Who is so obsessed with the Kardashians?
Although I will say Caitlyn Jenner has said she's a conservative, which is good news.
Yes, and that shocks Diane Sawyer more than the whole I'm a woman thing.
If you didn't see Diane Sawyer interview then Bruce Jenner talking about wanting to transition to a woman and said, yeah, I'm a conservative, I thought Diane's heart was going to seize right there.
Yes.
She couldn't believe it.
That was the one wonderful thing about that. Yes.
Yeah, remarkable.
And by the way, if you haven't seen the article, and maybe you have, but the New York Times article, it has Marco Rubio taking a bunch of zero down mortgages, having massive debt, massive student loan debt. He's just gotten married. When he enters the Florida legislature, he has like $50 in his bank account. He gets $800,000 for a book advance, and in addition to, you know, finally paying off his debt, and he's an adult married with a child, he buys an $80,000 speedboat, and a luxury speedboat. And yeah, okay, he didn't drown anyone like Teddy Kennedy, but is that our standard? It's not Benghazi, but it does show us something that is not classically American. And I mean, maybe it's Rubio, maybe it's our country, but I really do think we want to imbue people in our way of life because our way of life has been massively, shockingly successful. A big part of this book, like I say, the Forensic Files part of the book, where I go through shocking crimes committed by immigrants, mostly to illustrate how the media go out of their way to hide it. And it's crimes that we never had it in America. Gang rape, child rape, lots of incest, the burning down national forest, the destruction to our environment, pot farms going up, massive litter all over. Third worlders have no concept of litter. That is a first world thing. And, you know, I mean, I think the reason I concentrate on all these really sick, grotesque sexual crimes is, wow, wait a second, we had to be dragged through the Duke LaCrosse case for a year, and Mattress Girl up at Columbia, and you won't tell us about a child gang rape going on under our noses? You're hiding this story from us? Mainstream media or media? And I just think American women are about to find out. American men are the best you ever had it. You have no idea what's coming. You really, I mean, de Tocqueville wrote about how rape was taken so much more seriously in America than back in his home country of France. And France isn't exactly, you know, Bangladesh. But rape has always been taken seriously in this country. He commented on how what made America was the strength of its women, and they weren't sitting at home fainting. They were conquering the frontier. Women have always been respected and safe in this country. Well, you're not going to be safe anymore. Not if the culture is changing when you are bringing in just enormous numbers. They're changing us. We are not changing them, and we're not doing them any favors because there is no place else to go once America is gone. Mexico at least has the benefit of living next to the United States, as you were just saying.
Yeah.
Part of how they are, that Mexico is far from the worst country in the world, but a lot of what makes it as good as it is that they get to live next to us. Well, once we're Mexico, Mexico's only living next to Canada, which isn't bad, but it's not us.
So Ann Coulter's prescription then, you have long said, even before this book, I recall vividly you talked about the quality of immigrant and that this country used to have a standard of quality about the immigrant. It
yes.
wasn't just come on in if you want to. There was, you have sort of established criteria. Are you a shut the borders till further notice? Is that your position, or what is your position today on immigration?
Well, yeah, for one thing, yes. Our standard is must live within walking distance. Fantastic. Which, by the way, is very discriminatory. Bangladeshis don't live within walking distance. But the way Teddy Kennedy set up the rules, they're very complicated rules, mostly based on, quote, family reunification, which is really tribal reunification. You know, if you're related to somebody who's already here, who's related to somebody, oh, this is my third cousin, I'd be very lonely without him. You know, there's another way you could all stay together. Just stay there. But it just specifically, the rules discriminate against the countries that traditionally populated this country. Since 1970, we have taken in more immigrants from Nigeria than from England. Yeah, that's weird that you didn't know that. Huh, I wonder if the media's doing its job. You can't think, so many people say, oh yeah, but my grandfather came in and look, he did great things. No, forget about the Ellis Island immigrants, the pre-1970 immigrants versus the post-1970 immigrants. And I'm sure there are some nice post-1970 immigrants, but most of them are not. Pre-1970 immigrants were more educated, made more money, bought more houses than the native population. Post-1970, they are far more likely to be on welfare than the native population. Why would any country bring in people we have to help? We have our own poor people. It's utter, utter madness. Not only that, pre-1970, 30% of them used to go home. Now nobody goes home, they go on welfare. We looked around the world, we skimmed the cream. You know, we could tell people from backward cultures, you know, you don't speak the language, you're unfamiliar with our culture. Why don't you go to a JV country? We're kind of on a fast track here in America. We really want to get people going. You got to speak English. You got to be really ambitious. Also, part of what made America was so great was the primogeniture law in England, where the firstborn son gets everything, the title, the money, the land. All the other children get nothing. We got a lot of talent that way. We got a lot of talent. No, now we're taking the, you know, the retard youngest son. It's this idea has taken
you know,
hold.
You know what I love about your visit? Odds are we're going to wind up on the front of Drudge tomorrow. You are the best thing for my publicity ever.
I'm just speaking bluntly. The point is, our country is not a battered woman's shelter. Immigration is a policy like any other government policy. It ought to be used to benefit the people who already live here, and that includes immigrants.
Adios, America. You all have the book. It's very easy to read. It's very quick. It's brief. Read it. I have to pivot to one thing that I think is extremely important before you get to some questions, and then I know you got to run. You were speaking out on the issue of the censorship going on college campuses. You dealt with bigotry and trying to be silenced on college campuses long before the left. And now, lo and behold, comics in the American left are all wound up and in a snit, from Jerry Seinfeld to Patton Oswalt to Bill Maher and Chris Rock. They're all saying, the college kids are mean to me. They don't like my jokes. And all I kept thinking driving here was, here's a woman that stood on college campus stages time and again, even took pies.
They missed.
But missed. You were at the tip of that spear long before. Now the American left has figured out, oh, we have a problem with speech in this country.
Yes, yes. Well, I'll tell you two things about that. One is, for years, again, I spend a lot of time in New York and L.A., go to comedy clubs, and just in L.A., you're constantly running into people. I will tell you, there was a secret admiration society for Ann Coulter among comedians. Oh, they've been aware of this for a while. And you would be surprised at all the people who have come up to me or, you know, secretly sent me messages, because a comedian's job, they can't do what they do with political correctness. Even if they didn't like my politics, they were always with me on the PC stuff. And, the other thing I wanted to tell you was I went to a fantastic comedy club in New York City this past weekend. It's one I go to all the time. It's one of the premier ones. I've probably seen a dozen shows there. They're like a 90-minute show, six comedians. Dave Chappelle will drop in. Jerry Seinfeld will drop in. It's one of the top comedy cellar, it's called, if you want to go there. It's absolutely the best one in New York. And I've been writing this book, this magnificent book you are so lucky to have.
It's very easy to read.
That's very quick and funny.
Yeah.
And so I haven't been there for about a year. And what was interesting Saturday night was two things. They have expanded their comedy cellar. It's in the basement below a restaurant where the food is surprisingly good. They had to expand to another place around the corner, also in the basement, but probably as big as this theater is. Both basement locations, and for the first time, because usually the jokes are on everything. It's boyfriend, girlfriend stuff, a lot of that, a lot of sex jokes, a lot of work jokes, a lot of family jokes. For the first time, all 90 minutes were politically incorrect ethnic humor, except like 10 minutes on penis jokes. And I told all these comedians, I feel like we're in the Soviet Union, and because we're in the basement. We're going to our underground clubs to rebel against the regime. We're going to tell every ethnic joke we can think of.
It is amazing. I mean, Seinfeld said his daughter, they were talking about taking the daughter into the city. Well, we figure we'll live closer to the city because you're 14 now and you'll probably want to spend more time around boys.
Right.
And his daughter's response was, Dad, that's sexist.
Yes.
You know, he tells a joke about people going through their contacts in a phone like a gay French king. And he's Seinfeld.
They gasped at gay.
They gasp at gay. They do. Gay is one of the, you can't do that one.
Yeah.
Like, what's worse, the gay or the black or the Hispanic? Like, what are you getting most blowback on? What's the word you can't? I mean, so many. I don't know what you can't say.
Well, I try to use retard a lot on Twitter just because I know it'll upset them. Sometimes it's not even necessary. But, you know, come on. Where do they think idiot came from? Where do they think slow came from? Where do they think cretin came from? These were all, you know, technical terms. You can't call someone who actually has a mental disability a retard, but you can't do anything mean to somebody with an actual mental disability. If you don't have a mental disability, no, I'm sorry, I will call you anything.
And I go back to the beginning. That's where at least I think Bill Maher, I respect him at least for having you out and having this discussion. I think he gets at least that.
Oh, totally. Oh, comedians cannot stand political correctness.
Whereas I would argue a guy like Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert,
for instance,
would argue those guys have created this environment to a large extent.
Yeah. That's a very good point.
I really do believe
that's a very good point.
And now it's turning on their own.
Yes, that's a very good point. They would not do politically incorrect humor.
No.
No, and even
Seth Meyers, you know what Seth Meyers just said the other night? He said, I just didn't think doing a Caitlyn Jenner joke was appropriate because she was on the cover of Vanity Fair, and I thought it was a lovely thing.
And Seinfeld called him on it.
Yes, he did. That's ridiculous.
Yep.
And so what, Caitlyn Jenner's now off limits forever?
I mean, Seinfeld was polite about it, but he called Seth Meyers on it, which I loved.
I did too.
And Meyers said, oh, well, I might do a joke in the future, but just not when she's on the cover of Vanity Fair, because it was just such a beautiful moment.
No, look, and the reality
and
is
Seinfeld claimed, oh, well, okay, that's okay, but I think he was just being a polite guest. I'm so glad he called him on that. What do you mean you want to do a joke on?
Because this is where we are, and whether people hate you or hate Seinfeld or hate Bill Maher, it doesn't matter. If we're at a place where we're all just terrified to open our mouths, that's the worst possible place for the country to be.
Yes. Yes, but it's good for liberals. It's good for liberals if we can't communicate with one another, which is basically what it's going toward.
All right. Some folks in the audience with some questions. Let me get through a couple of them here. Is it because the Democrats promise to compensate them with ever more government programs that the black community continues to vote against their own self-interests on this issue? Why else would they support the party that wants to bring in more job competition? You have made the delineation between blacks and all others, so
right.
To that point.
Well, I'm still hoping we will get African Americans back.
And would you give Rand Paul credit at least on the?
No, wait.
Only on the front of at least attempting to communicate with them. He seems to be.
No.
You don't interpret it that way?
No, he's attempting to communicate with them by saying, "Let's release prisoners."
Well,
let's
delegalize
drugs. Oh, too many blacks and browns are in prison. It's the biggest nonsense. Yeah. Who does he think these blacks and browns are going to go out and mug? Other blacks and browns. It's nonsense.
I was wrong.
And it's insulting. No, you communicate with blacks. Look, you communicate with blacks the way Mitt Romney did. 20% of the young black male vote. Look, we have a lot to overcome. You do get kind of an ethnic voting thing going, but I think most of it probably has to do with illegitimacy. And I mean, that's going to create not only criminality, but welfare dependency. That's the problem. And, I mean, nobody says to a white person who votes Democrat, how can you vote against your race? But you do get that if you're black. I always admire the black conservatives. They take a lot of guff. And boy, they're not flipping.
Yeah.
They've thought it through.
And there are. I'll tell you, one of the great things about coming to Philadelphia is meeting all the fantastic black conservatives there are in our audience. And there's a very active constituency of black conservatives in Philadelphia. You should know.
Good.
Yes.
We're sending a box of books to Marco Rubio, and there are various we're going to have, because I'm going to D.C. after this, Numbers USA. So there's some good anti-immigration groups in Washington. And so my publicist was just, I was just emailing about it on the way here, and was saying, but we think we're going to have this box delivered. You can send one directly to Marco Rubio on my webpage. Or to your congressman. It auto-fills it in that reads your zip code for only $16 to save the country. Some anti-immigration group is going to send a box of books to Marco while I'm there. And when I heard that it was going to be Numbers USA, and I told my publicist, that's fantastic. Love Numbers USA. But I would really like to get a black anti-immigration group. There are a bunch of them. At least check. See if they'd like to.
2016 Republican.
Because if I could just continue.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
No.
I'm talking so much. If I could just continue that point. The reason I like that is it makes the point. Not the same thing. Stop pretending you're black. Unless you're black, you're not black.
No, that's an honest to God hashtag on Twitter right now. Again, this is the third time Caitlyn Jenner's come up. I'm sorry, but the woman now tweeted out hashtag wrong skin. I swear to God, this is a new hashtag. If you feel like you're black, you're just hashtag wrong skin. I don't know where we live, Anne. I feel perpetually drunk, and I assure you, I haven't had a drop.
I love that Rachel Dozeler, or whatever her name is. This is my favorite story. You can check. I'm going to be back if I keep writing books, and I'm only writing books if this book works, because there's no point otherwise. If this doesn't stop, there's no point to Fox News, no point to me writing books, no point to anything we do. Just build the bunker and hire the cheap maids. But I'm hoping the book will work. And assuming I come back in 20 years, I will still tell you my favorite news story of all time is that NAACP girl.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
I think we have reached a new plateau in liberal hoaxes. We have her not only pretending to be black by putting on the skin tanner stuff and getting a perm, but sending herself her own racist hate mail. So we got the double whammy. It's the strangest case of someone faking out and pretending to be a black woman since Michael Jackson.
May he rest in peace. Killing me up here. Have any, you don't have to name them, it is a great question, do Republican candidates ever, throughout history or this current batch, do any of them consult with Ann Coulter? Ever?
Yes.
They do. As an active member of the campaign?
Not enough. Usually, I will say, usually I try to avoid meeting politicians because I feel like my role is to, again, correct them. And if I meet somebody, it's hard to attack somebody you've met. At least it is for me. Bob Novak used to tell me, oh, no, Ann, that makes it more fun. So I used to try to avoid meeting them, but I happened to end up meeting some of them by accident. And yes, a few of them do. No, not part of the campaign.
Do they? Here's what I've found in my very limited experience, and it's normally at the state level. I find that politicians have utter contempt, generally, for people, at least like me. I won't speak to you. You have a national platform. I don't. But more often than not, when I meet politicians, they think guys like me, I just don't get it. Now, I feel like I spend more time talking
yep.
with you every day than they do.
Yep.
And yet they will say to me in private, they've said it to my face, you don't understand
yes.
what we do. They're there.
They're
very condescending.
No, that is very short-sighted.
And it just pisses me off.
Yeah, it should.
You're
totally right. I do think that was part of Reagan's greatness, the GE tours.
Yeah.
You really have to meet real Americans.
And that's what Scott Walker's doing, if I may.
Yes. Yes. Yes, well, Scott Walker... Look, if we can't, I would prefer Walker to be vice president to Romney for 8 years, but if we can't persuade Romney to win, Walker is the only choice. Oh my gosh.
Which Batman villain does MSNBC host Torre most resemble? A, the Joker, B, the Riddler, C, Catwoman. There's a writer in the audience tonight.
Catwoman.
Catwoman. Why do you do that? Why do you go on MSNBC?
I don't. I'd love to go on.
But you will. You'll go on the Today Show. You'll go on the NBC's.
Oh, I keep begging them to have me on MSNBC. I know people who personally know Rachel Maddow. You have never seen it, but she is a zealot on MSNBC. Oh, I would love to go on her show. I have...
Is there a show you won't do? Is there anyone you say, nope, not doing it?
Uh-uh.
I love that.
No, and I stalk them. I try to have them put me on. No, this is my 11th book. I mean, my 11th New York Times bestseller.
Which is a very quick read, I found.
Yes. It's funny, isn't it?
Yes.
And it used to be the first, I would say, 5, 6, 7 books, their idea was we must anathematize her. We have to turn her into poison, warn people off so they won't read her book. We're going to establish that, you know, there's Hitler, there's Timothy McVeigh, and there's Ann Coulter. Do you want to be seen with an Ann Coulter book? And so they used to invite me on to try to destroy me. And it didn't work. And that was the first few years. And then, like, the middle-range books, it was the lesser lights who would try to do it and make a name for themselves. But it really, it's been like 3 or 4 books now. They've just given up.
Is it because, is there a possibility, I would submit it so, and I've encountered it over the events that we've had here with you live, people fundamentally misunderstand who you are and your positions because you're reduced to quick sound bites, and when they see you in long form, damn it, I kind of like her.
Oh, no, they still hate me. They just keep losing the argument.
Yeah.
And they don't like losing the argument.
And you're one of the few people that will, we've talked about this before, when you do a book, you vanish. This is what's really
yes.
remarkable about you. Have you noticed this about her? She's like Punxsutawney Phil. She comes out about once a year with a huge book, explodes for like a month, and then vanishes. Because what you do is you research.
Yes.
And when you come back on a book like this, you don't just talk platitudinally. You can dot Jorge Ramos between the eyes with stats every time. That's why they're scared to death of you.
And I not only write my own books, which is very rare, shockingly rare, and I don't care if I am exposing probably most of the books you have on your bookshelves. Most writers don't write their own books. I mean, McCullough does. What's his name? Thomas Sowell does. And I would say almost no one does his own research. They have research assistants. Not moi, which is, but there's a, I mean, it, it there's a reason for that. There's a benefit for that. This book wasn't going to be this book. The immigration was going to be a few chapters in the book I had in my head. I had already written a couple of the chapters and outlined some of the other ones. I had it all laid out. I sold it to the publisher. This is the book I'm writing. Halfway through the summer, I start looking up, you know, some basic facts about immigration, like how many immigrants are in prison. And 2 weeks later, through tears of frustration and rage, I called my publisher and said, you know, that book I told you I was writing, I still think that's a great idea for a book. Maybe that'll be the next book, if this one works. But that's not going to be this book. I got to tell you what I found. The government will not tell us how many immigrants are in prison. And they're hiding it. They are hiding it specifically. I've looked through the media. I've gone to Department of Justice reports, Bureau of Prison reports, Census reports. They come up with sneaky ways to hide it. This is all described in Chapter 7. And then, you know, eventually I have to say, look, I wish I had the actual facts. The government keeps very careful records. In 2 seconds on Google, you can find out how many Samoans have battery-powered radios. You can find out how many Americans have mold in their bathrooms, how many have missing or broken stair railings. That information is collected at great expense and, you know, tabulated by statisticians over years. No, to tell us how many immigrants are in prison, and I would like to know for what crimes and where are they from, all the government has to do is count. All they have to do is count. They're already, these are people under your custody. We're paying your salaries. Just count. But they won't tell us that. And then the more I looked into it, it was just astonishing to me how much they were hiding about immigration. One part I cut in the 200 pages I cut before the book came out, I may use this in a column, were two almost identical crimes, a child molestation and a gang rape. These are two separate crimes. Gang rape in Texas, child rape in, I think it was Alabama. Two of them took place in each place. Almost the exact same time, almost the exact same crime. In one case, the perpetrators were black of the same crime. In one case, it was Hispanic immigrants. Same thing in the Alabama case. One case black, one case Hispanic. One made the news and one didn't. Black case made the news. When the mainstream media is more likely to cover up the race of a criminal who is black than who is an immigrant, we are at a crisis level of censorship.
Before we wrap, I always like to Google our guests just to see what's popping out there.
Oh, believe nothing they say about me. If you read it on my webpage, it's true. I didn't date those boys. I don't make that much money. I'm not that old.
All right, then good night, everybody. Those were my next three questions. No, the left is furious with you about something, but it has absolutely nothing to do with politics. You've admitted something that has just destroyed the left on satellite radio in this past week. You just told everyone that you're a deadhead. Ann Coulter's a Grateful Dead fan, ladies and gentlemen, and they are out of their minds. People, I read people saying, well, she's a deadhead. I'm done with Jerry Garcia. That's it.
Oh, good. I can go back to their memorial concert. Good. If liberals stay away.
Oh, it was hilarious. I loved reading that. Ann Coulter's a deadhead. They were just apoplectic. Listen, every single time we find out of books about to come out, we reach out to you right away. And every time, without hesitation, I mean within an hour, you personally write back and say, I'd love to come back. You did it again. And to our delight, isn't this lady wonderful? It's Ann Coulter, everybody.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. That's because I love you people. This is the most wonderful crowd. It's really fun, and thank you so much for having me all the time. It's really been wonderful, and I wish I had more time to talk to all of you personally.
Here's what you have been very good to do. Everybody, you spent time while commuting signing, frantically
signing.
Yes,
you're signing. All going to get a signed book. It's going to be on a book plate.
All right, so she has signed those. You are off to another location because you are, like, in high demand right now. You're off to another.
I'm going to stalk them in Congress tomorrow. I think you want me doing that.
So what we're going to do is let you head on out the door while I close with a few announcements.
Great, thank you.
All right.
Thank
so ladies
you
and
so
gentlemen,
much.
The lovely, the talented, Ann Coulter.
Thank you.